Today on the Cooligans, we are talking to the one and only USMNT legendary goalkeeper, Brad Friedel. You remember him between the sticks, coaching the New England Revolution. And we talk to him about the Gold Cup and the failure against Mexico.
Right. Plus, we go around the league, talk about Club World Cup. The final is set. It's now Chelsea versus PSG. But we just watched PSG absolute body Real Madrid. So we talk about that. And the third segment, we get a little serious, a little bit of a trigger warning. We talk about SA and R that is happening in soccer, and we're not happy about it. So we talk about that and more today on the Cooligans. This is the fun part of the year where you and I get to be a part of all these events. There's almost too many events.
Yeah, it's getting a little crazy.
Yeah, but every once in a while we get hired to be at an event. Now that's the fun one.
Sure. Usually we're just asked to leave.
Yeah, most
events.
Yeah. They're like, well, you came with Alexis, so you also have to leave. I think it's a phrase said to you a lot.
Right.
But we were asked to host the Dortmund fan event before the game.
Yes.
Go on the bus. We got to go to the game. Hospitality. You know what I mean? Shouts to hospitality. I'm a big fan of you, hospitality.
Yeah.
But we got to host the event. It was disgustingly hot. It was 94 degrees, 95?
Yeah, just like the players have to play these matches, you know, on the pitch. Sometimes the comedy hosts for these footy events also have to do incredible work and show incredible athleticism.
Well, let's be honest.
And strength.
Let's talk about it, all right? Because I don't think that enough has been said about this. A game is 90 minutes. We were asked to be there at 10 a.m. and then leave at 1 p.m.
Yeah.
So who's on there more?
Exactly. All right, who got more minutes?
Who's dealing with the elements more? I think it would be us.
I'm just saying we got more minutes than Gio Reyna.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus. Yeah. Okay. Even if you premature ejaculate, you're getting in there more minutes. And you're lasting longer than Gio Reyna.
Best of luck in your career, Gio.
Yeah.
We are fans.
Whatever. If he's listening to the podcast, this isn't on the video. This is just for the audio. But the reason I bring this up is because every once in a while we get asked to host an event.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, hey, just keep in mind there's going to be families there. There's going to be kids there. And it's like, we want it to be funny, but here's some bumpers up. You know,
here's
what you can. And oftentimes, I feel like I'm the first one to blow past that. Do we need it?
Oftentimes? I mean, you're pretty consistently. Always.
I'd like to think I inspire you to break go past the line. I break down the door and you walk through that opening.
I'm like, is it door open?
Yeah, it's crazy. What's Alexis doing in there? I remember it was getting kind of stale and we were trying to give away tickets to the raffle. And no one's coming up. And I'm really confused. I'm like, man, there's like, whatever, 10 people just walked in. And I just said, hey, have you gotten tickets? We're raffling tickets again. They can't all have tickets to the game.
Exactly.
So I was very confused. But then this young German woman comes up to get tickets. Her name's Francie. Beautiful young lady. I say, hey, what's your name? She goes, Francie. I go, very cool. She says to the guy, she goes, can I get one for my mom back there? And I go, oh, Francie's trying to get extra tickets now. I think she said it's for her mom. I think she's lying because I just see her sister back there.
Yeah.
And the place is like, woo! Yeah, Francie's mom blushing.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Actively risen up a mom.
I just start risen up a mom. And then you're like, okay, Alexis out here destroying families.
You know? This is why this mother and daughter who know, I don't know her relationship status.
By the way, they're not even from here. They're German. They speak with German accents.
Well, that's the thing. I think being in Brooklyn, it's a little, it sort of messes with my brain a little bit.
I'm
from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I'm in a spot in Brooklyn, in Williamsburg.
This is your home.
I know. I'm like, yo, chatting with people, whatever. And then when I was like grabbing the mic and going to different people in the crowd, I'm like, why is everybody German? Like,
yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
It's a little jarring.
Bro, this is Brooklyn, not Brooklyn, you know? But
man.
I realized, wait a minute. Chris is talking to people. There's a lot of German accents out there. They may not be understanding what I'm saying. So I took it upon myself to go to Google Translate.
This was brutal.
This was not brutal. I went to Google Translate and I said, bro, this is... We have to close. I forgot what I said, but basically like time is running out. Come up to the stage and get tickets for the raffle. We're giving away tickets to the game.
Yeah.
And I'm hitting this like, wenn du ganz in Glügen.
You're reading it off of Google Translate. Oh my God.
Hitting it with like, somehow my Jersey accent got even heavier for this.
It was excruciating.
Yeah.
There's very few times that I'm like genuinely embarrassed of things that you do. And this was just, I was embarrassed personally and professionally.
Yeah, yeah. What happened next? Admit it, Christian.
Yes. People were so shocked. They were like, what?
40 blonde people walked towards the stage.
They were like, what is going on here? Yeah.
Also, I looked over at Jan, who works for Dorman, yeah, who's giving out the tickets. And he looks at me and goes, that was actually pretty close. It's like, we all understood you, you know?
They were being polite.
This is like when my mom would go to supermarkets and she's like, I'm looking for the pork. Where it is, you know, like that. No, that's what I did.
That's not what you did.
I did that in German. I had a heavier English accent. It was the opposite.
Yeah, I think there's something too, because it did feel so uncomfortable that there. I think there's something with the German language and just German people.
When does German ever sound comfortable?
No, it's not even about... No. I mean, when it's spoken by a fluent speaker, I'm not going to say it's uncomfortable.
It's all consonants. No. The whole language.
But there's something... German is a language that you are allowed to make fun of. The society... Nobody gets mad if you make fun of German. Even German people are like... Okay, we're getting mocked for no real reason.
Well, but, I mean, you start two wars against the world.
And that's what it is. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's a forever punchline.
It's a forever stain on your flag.
You're gonna have to just deal with it and smile. Yeah. Regardless of
But I don't think people were offended by what I was doing because I think they realized, oh, he's trying to communicate with us.
This is genuine.
This is like when a gorilla is telling someone they're sad.
In sign language. You're not gonna correct them.
No. You're like, all right, I think he's sharing emotions and that's new. I wish I could pull it up. I'm gonna look through my history because I want to read it real quick.
No,
dude, I'm telling you, I made amends with a society that day.
Well, okay, well,
hold on. What day was this?
On Saturday.
Okay, this was Saturday. Here we go. July 5th.
Yeah. You Google Translate history?
No, I have because I did it on the website. I look up a lot of Porsches. This is crazy. Herbert, no, hold on a second. Here we go. German word for cornhole.
I remember.
Do you remember that?
Yes, because they were playing
cornhole, and it's Maislach is the word here. Oh wait, I gotta put my volume up.
Maislach.
I was pretty good. So here, hold on. I'll get to it. Stop telling me to move on, Carter. I got 1 second here.
Please cut this out of the show.
No, please not. Hold on.
Okay. Can't wait. I was there. Can't wait to re-experience this.
Okay, here we go. I put Die Verlosung ist fast vorbei. Holen Sie sich Ihre Tickets an der Bühne, Tickets für das Spiel zu gewinnen. Imagine you heard that.
Yeah, even better the second time. Yeah. Alexis, thank you.
And let me tell you something. The people who were German were like, he's speaking to us. And everyone else is like, well, the last time I saw a German guy yelling on microphone, it was during history class.
Yeah. So that was Saturday. Then we went to the game.
And we had a good time.
And Dortmund, looked pretty bad most of the game. And then the last 3 minutes, they decided to show up and score 2 goals. Interestingly enough, we'll talk about Club World Cup, but there was a late red card in that game to Dean Huijsen that I think affected this Club World Cup match that they just played against PSG. Who knows if things would have been very different, but So, all right, let's get started. Welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco.
Hey, I'm Alexis Guerrero.
Hot show today. Obviously, we're going to talk about Club World Cup and a couple other things going on, but
we also have
the one and only Brad Friedel.
What?
Look at the big brains on Brad. Okay. Shout out to all the Pulp Fiction heads out there. Brad Friedel, legendary.
I did not get that reference.
You don't watch movies?
I haven't seen that movie in years.
Brad Friedel, legendary USMNT goalkeeper, is doing some commentary for the zone. So we're going to talk some Club World Cup with him. But obviously, the Gold Cup and the national team.
Yeah, we bring up the US Women's National
team. Yeah, there's a lot of...
Quite a bit.
A lot of insight on old Brad. I think our second time meeting...
beating him, a lot to say.
Was a little bit friendlier than the last time.
The first time was a bit contentious.
So I'm glad we sorted that out. So we have to get right to it because we had a great conversation with him. And I expected some insight on the world of football and especially the national team and especially...
Yeah, but if you played for the U.S. men's national team, you're thinking about all this so differently.
Exactly. And Brad Friedel shares all of that. And I think a lot of people are going
to... put us on game.
Exactly. We need that. We got no game. All right?
No game. Damn, Rizless over here, bro.
Right? I can't speak German like Alexis.
Yo, Gavinin. So, ticket der Gavinin, bro.
So let's get to our conversation with the one and only Brad Friedel. Absolutely honored to be joined by our next guest.
This is huge.
We were actually meeting him for the second time.
That's right.
We'll talk about that because we met him at his Hall of Fame induction ceremony.
He invited us personally, which I thought was a sweet gesture.
It was a lovely...
Having never met us before.
A lovely letter. But you may know him as one of the U.S. MNT, just legendary goalkeepers. I think somebody who really set the bar or continued to raise the level of how we view...
Well, he set the crossbar, is what you're saying.
of how we view American goalkeepers. And we're kind of in a situation right now where we don't exactly know...
Exactly.
Who is the number one American goalkeeper.
There's no hymns right now,
and
bro.
It's an odd place to be because we've been spoiled with great goalkeepers. So absolutely honored to be joined by the one and only Brad Friedel. Brad, how are you doing?
I'm doing really good. How are you guys?
We're great. It's nice to talk to you. The first time we met you was in Frisco, Texas. The Soccer Hall of Fame was just opened, or it was
that was the opening.
It was
ceremony.
Renovated, right? Or something along those lines.
No, that was the opening ceremony. I think it was just like in shipping containers before that.
And you were honored there, but at the time you were the coach for the New England Revolution. I remember walking up to you. We both did, and we were like, "This is a serious man. I don't know if we should be approaching Brad Friedel because he's all about business." So the
intimidating is the word I think you're looking for.
Exactly.
There, dude.
The tone, even you are. We were talking before, and you are in the Bahamas. You are you're wearing glasses. You're a lot more chill than I
don't know. Look at the face he's making, and he's in a paradise. Like, this guy is still a serious man, Brad.
Come on. No, I don't. You know, it's somebody I met with the technical director of English FA the other day for a coffee, and he's a good friend of mine. And he made a comment. He told me that I'm quite intimidating when I speak to people. I am chill. I don't know. I'm not, I don't try to be intimidating. I don't know.
I don't remember your height. You were significantly taller than we
Much
are. I mean,
taller.
A lot of goalkeepers can tend to be intimidating presence, which is, I think that's a good feature to have if you are a goalkeeper in any league in the world. But I want to start today, just obviously thanking you for joining us. And we have a lot to talk about because we want to talk about Gold Cup. We want to talk about the Club World Cup, which you were doing co-commentary on. So let's start there. We just got back yesterday. We were at the Fluminense Chelsea match. We also went to Dortmund, Real Madrid. We also went to Al Ahly against Porto. And these matches have been fantastic, especially I think the main thing people are noticing is the supporters groups, and especially from different countries all over the world, and bringing that culture to American stadiums. You were doing commentary, especially in Seattle, and the games were incredible there as well. The Sounders, unfortunately, didn't get a win, but your experience taking in what it sort of looked like in the stands, the games themselves, the quality of the football, the complaints about either the heat or the schedule and everything. How have you, processed it all?
First and foremost, I think the entire event has been a huge success. It's not easy putting these type of events together, especially when you add more games to a calendar. You see the amount of games, especially the Brazilian teams and the Premier League teams have played over the course of the last 12 months, it's difficult to put them together. In Seattle, fortunately for all the teams, they didn't have to deal with the weather. The weather was beautiful, very, very nice conditions. One of the days it was like 55 degrees and a little bit of a miss coming down on the field. The crowds were tremendous. I guess the one crowd that had the lowest marks, I think it was like 15 or 18,000, was Urawa Reds against River Plate, but it was really loud on the day. The other crowds were incredible. You mentioned Seattle not winning. Seattle was in a touch of a difficult group.
Yeah.
So, you think so?
So
lightly yeah. put, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought they performed really well considering who they were up against. I thought in the first two games, they started a little bit tentatively and they didn't have good first half performances. But the second half, they were very good and created quite a few chances of their own right. When you go up against PSG, they're just awesome. They have no weaknesses at this moment in time. Luis Enrique has brought in a mentality that is second to none in European football, could be global football at the moment. If somebody gets injured, tired, etc., their bench is full of quality that doesn't drop and in some cases could even increase. Like in that game, for instance, Barcola came on late on and I thought Alex Roldan was
he's like
you're taking this guy off, you're bringing this guy on, come on. And then you saw PSG's class against Inter Miami, but I think those were the three best teams since Seattle Sounders have become a club that they've ever faced in competitive competition.
And consecutively, right? And
that's, yeah.
Yep. And but that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. It's not a negative thing.
Sure.
It's they've seen up close what the best look like. You know, you take Obed Vargas, for instance. It was the first time at his young age that he was able to play against players like that. You know, he got kicked to bits against Botafogo, who was the other Atletico Madrid. Right. I mean, two of the most physical teams. You know, River, they didn't play them, obviously, but they're another physical team. And then they had to play against probably the fastest physical players in PSG, but also in their ball movement. And I thought when they moved him in a couple of games from the 8 to the 10, I thought he looked really good.
Sure.
So you have to take at nowadays where MLS is, you have to take glasses half full approach to a lot of these things because it's still a developing league. I know a lot of people want to always point out the negatives and the criticisms, but let's be honest, there's a lot of good to this too.
Yeah, of course. I think the benefit of Club World Cup is that it showed Americans who are, you know, if you look at sort of like on a marketing perspective, the amount of deep loyal fans to the sport, there's a significant amount in this country, but there are so much more, multiple multitudes of people that are casually interested in the sport, but don't know as much. When you look at sort of having a Club World Cup competition that is in the summer, but multiple games, multiple cities, gives a chance. Do you think that's done enough good to get maybe some of those more casual fans a lot more interested in the sport? Do you think these matches were the right showcases for that?
It all depends. Every little bit helps. You know, we still have a long way to go on the cultural aspect of soccer in the United States. And I was asking this question to a very influential figure last week. Sorry, I can't go into the name, but I asked.
You can mention you spoke to me. Yeah, but yeah. It's fine.
Exactly. But I asked this guy and he doesn't live over here. He doesn't work over here, but he's been here throughout the whole Club World Cup. And I said, do you think if you actually brought over the best coach in the world, whoever you think that is, whether it's Luis Enrique or Pep Guardiola or whatever, and you gave them a youth team in New York or Florida or Texas or California, doesn't matter where, do you think those 20 players would become professionals? And the answer probably is no, because we still have to compete against the other sports in the U.S. We still have to create a mentality that's not over here of it's like a do or die sport. And by the way, that's still okay. We're building. Right. And people don't want to hear that. They don't. Oh, it should be, you know, what is it? 30 years in the league and it should be better. It should be this. It should be that. But these other teams have been together for over 100 years,
yeah,
and some a lot more than that. And they're still building.
Right.
They haven't stopped. So, you know, so we have to close the gap. How do you close the gap? We basically have to wait for more generational turns to happen to create more fans, to create more of a household environment that soccer is the sport. So on to your comment about does this help? Yes, every little bit helps. Yeah. Even if it's 0.25%.
Yeah.
Like every little bit helps. So you look at the inception of MLS, they chose to do it based on, or they had a decision to make. Do they start from the top and go down? Or do they start from the grassroots and go up? Well, they started from the top. And by the way, neither was right and neither was wrong. That's what they chose to do. So then as the top started sort of slipping a little bit, they then figured out they had to do the grassroots. One of the things that happened while they did the developmental academy that they probably didn't think or account for, and by the way, again, it's not a fault of anyone's because you don't know a lot of these things until they actually happen. It's kind of like dealing with COVID. You don't know how to deal with it until it's in front of your face. Is they all of a sudden, the coaches started to need the players more than the players needed the coaches. And we created a little bit of a complacency culture for about a decade in the academy teams where the players were continuously being told how good they were. Instead of work on this, work on this, work on this, work on this.
It's interesting. I don't mean to cut you off, but you brought a lot of these things up when you were the coach of the Revolution, and a lot of people did not like. They felt it was like a little too either rigid or old timey or whatever. And it's interesting in the when speaking about it, I think even also in hindsight, and then with and we'll get to the Gold Cup and losses in the Gold Cup and. Players, you know, that are causing controversy by not playing for the national team when they do have the opportunity. It's something where I think those statements are resonating a little bit more of just like, I remember you talking about just a kind of like the cutthroat nature of what it was like to play in England, and people didn't want to hear it back then. And now we're playing in a World Cup and we're seeing kind of the results we're getting, those losses against Turkey and Switzerland, and it was just like, oh man, I thought Pochettino was gonna kind of fix this all and bring that culture, and that isn't where that comes from, right?
He will though. Like, this is the thing. Like, what to create a culture, a lot of times you have to break some things down, and when you're breaking it down, very similar to me at New England, you're gonna have people that fight against it. I could have changed my sort of moral cultures within a club and let it be easier for the players, but that's not who I was. And there are a couple of players that, again, I won't mention names, that especially one that went over to Europe that I coached, and he's openly said that the things that you brought into the club is what the teams in Europe do every day. We didn't see that, so we fought against it.
Right.
And I was just trying to build the club up, and I only did about half of what you could do. and
otherwise you'd be in prison.
So, yeah, I know. Like, this guy's
no.
This guy's a dictator out there.
No, but it was like simple things like hydration testing and body fat measurements and body weights and dietary needs, just normal things that were just normal.
Yeah, yeah.
Like what you wear on an airplane. I mean, simple. Like, not for me. Could you imagine this? Like, being at Liverpool and they put up, you're wearing a club tracksuit, and me walking into the manager at the time and say, "Excuse me, Mr. Hooley, I don't want to wear a blue tracksuit."
Right.
Doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate to tell you this. You're now the janitor. You know, you're no longer a player on this club.
Yeah. It's so anyways, maybe I was there a little bit too soon. Maybe I tried to change too much too quick. And I can be stubborn, too stubborn for my own good sometimes, you know, but I still stand by the things that I was trying to accomplish.
Well, I'm glad you're not in charge of this podcast, because body was a fat body fat testing. Yeah, what you eat? Chill, dude.
It would not go well.
I'm 54 now, so black is. I know we're white right now. Black is my favorite color now.
Buddy, look at me. You can't tell what I look like. This is perfect. I need to hide. I guess part of what we're talking about is sort of expecting, holding yourself to a higher standard. And how the sport outside of the U.S., for good or bad reasons, demands you to always have this pressure of being like the peak of your performance and being as good as you possibly can, in particular when you're wearing a nation's shirt, right? When you're representing an entire nation. I think a lot of American fans are a little bit, there's a feeling of disgruntlement based on the way that it's sort of gone since Mauricio Pochettino's come in, because really the Gold Cup was the last competitive matches before the World Cup. And there's a feeling like, oh, wow, it feels like some of the players didn't hold it to the highest regard. And it feels like maybe the players we brought in weren't the best quality. And, you know, in particular, the striker situation, you're a goalkeeper, you faced a lot of strikers. It seems like, oh, my God, we're getting to the World Cup, but we still don't even know who our number one is. Would you say you share a lot of those feelings? What were your thoughts based on watching that?
No, and a couple of things here. I have to preface this because people know that I'm friends with Mauricio and his staff, but I have to tell you that I never talk to Mauricio about the U.S. national team when I see him. If he wants to know something or ask something, he would ask me. His staff is excellent. My take on the whole, the reason for the team call-ups, I think Mauricio knows every league in Europe intimately, inside and out, and to understand the players that are playing in Europe, he knows what he has. MLS, unless you've been over here and lived it and done it, you don't know it as intimately just from watching from afar. And again, this is, I'll always preface all this. This is my guess on why the squad was what it was. I think he wanted to know what mentality some of the MLS players were when push came to shove, and what players are going to be able to contribute as a starting 11 or in the top 15 or in the squad in general. Who do I have? So is Alex Freeman, who's only been in Orlando's environment, will he be mentally strong enough to be able to step up when it's needed? And the one thing is that MLS mentally is an easier league than if you go into Argentina, Brazil, the top five leagues in Europe, and many other clubs in Europe and Liga MX. And it's cultural. And by the way, that's okay. We still have a ways to go. I think he was looking at who he had. So instead of, I didn't look at this as going into this big negative on who he called in and losing to Mexico in the final. I look at this as he sees Richards probably as more of a leader than he probably thought. I think Tim Ream's still there because he knows he's a leader off the field. I think he needed to see what, we'll get to the goalkeeper situation in a minute. I think he wanted to see who can compete with Sergiño Dest and Anthony Robinson, if that's even a possibility. I think Tillman came out of it with huge pluses. I think Luna put himself in with a shout of making the squad where he probably wouldn't have before. You know, I think you're looking at some players who showed to Mauricio on and off the field that they can adapt to his style of play. I take you back to a player with Borod Milutinovic, 1994 World Cup. I don't think anyone would have ever had Mike Sorber starting the games. Mm. But he did in Borod Milutinovic's system. We qualified out of an incredibly difficult group. Oh, okay, so Mauricio is a smart guy. He's a methodical guy. Every decision he makes means something. So don't be confused with a couple of decisions that the overall public doesn't agree with while he's creating a culture that he feels will be successful in 2026.
I'll just say this. Don't tell me that I can't get mad.
Yeah,
Brad, I want to get mad sometimes.
If anyone's allowed to be unreasonable, it's a podcast hosted by two comedians.
I mean, that is, you know, what we were, you know, we were live right after the Gold Cup final. And, you know, the entire audience is, they're reactionary, right? And we sort of are as well. We try to corral it in a little bit and try to be as humorous and fun and lighthearted about it. But, I mean, it's hard to look at the comments and not just hear like Ajimang's not good enough or you know, why is the goalkeeper situation where it is and things like that. But I appreciate that perspective that you're offering, especially in regards to what Pochettino is thinking.
Saying, trust the process.
Sorry to cut you off, because I want to add one other thing on this. When I was playing, and thankfully, I never had to deal with the social media outbursts, because I was too old for that, which is, if I played on a Saturday and made a mistake, it was on match of the day at the night, it was on a loop every 30 minutes on a Sunday, and a Monday it was gone. Okay, so once, there's like the saying, the newspaper article today is the chippy paper tomorrow.
That's when I get into it. You know what I mean?
So the only, your mistake was between you, your teammate, and your coaching staff. Like, really, you know, and your own fans will remember it, but it's not this incessant just pounding on people all the time. And so these players today have to deal with that added social media pressure. Okay, so if you can imagine you're sitting at home and you're on your social media account, or your mom or your brother, your sister, your dad, somebody says, do you see what so-and-so's saying? And it goes on for a month. Yeah. And then you post one thing and just more people jump onto it. It's an added element that the players have to deal with. So, I mean, my suggestion is get off social media, but that's not the reality. Right. With the,
how are you going to DM the baddies if you're not?
Also, brand work, Brad. I'm trying to get this money.
We're trying to do TikTok dances, Brad Frito. I mean,
I get it. So these players have that added situations where they're like not likable now. Or likable because of what they do on social media. And so now if you know, the whole Pulisic thing just explodes. Whereas before, that would have been, I'll use Eric Winalda. He's a friend of mine, so I can say it. Eric Winalda does an interview, says something controversial, and it rolls for, I don't know, a week on written press, and then it's gone. Now, man, somebody takes a little bit, they take another little spot, and then boom. It's this big thing, and then you have the, you know, the family wanting to comment, the player wanting to comment, the whole public wanting to comment, and then the fans wanting to comment. And thank goodness I never had to deal with that. So you always have to look at both sides, in my opinion, before you really have the out and out say in the situation. If you have to understand both sides. So is Adjuman the guy? That's for Mauricio to decide. He's the coach, and it's for the fans to debate. That's no problem. Everyone has opinions, but just because the social media gets loud doesn't mean Mauricio is the type of person that I don't care about.
Mauricio's not like, Patrick, do you see what they're saying about you on social media?
What's the vibes on the internet? Would be interesting. Here's my question. I mean, now that you are essentially a fan, but at an elevated level, I'm talking to the men's national team. You're a fan now, but at an elevated level because you played for the team. You understand football much greater than most fans that are watching. What's your What are your thoughts on, we'll talk about goalkeeper in a second. What are your thoughts on where the striker situation is currently?
I think the two most important situations on this team are unresolved, which is unfortunate a year out. I think the striker and the goalkeeping situation. I think a lot of the other positions are resolved and or getting resolved. And even if you liked Musa more than Adams or more than McKinney or more than Tillman, they're all good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, or Cardoso, although he hasn't had maybe national team performances, but he plays really well for his club teams and stuff. There are players out there that I think most fans would be like, oh, that's okay. If he starts and he doesn't, that's fine. The striker situation is a little bit of a problem at the moment. And we have to wait and see if it's going to be Pepe's job, if Balogun can stay fit, if Josh Sargent's going to be the guy. As you said, I am a fan now, and looking at it, I don't have answers for that. And I also don't have answers for the goalkeeping situation. You know, you have Matt Turner, Zach Steffen, Matt Freese, Patrick Schulte, and Chris Brady, in my opinion, who is the core. I really like what I've seen from Schulte and Brady at young ages, playing consistently. I think Zach and Matt are both excellent goalkeepers, but they found themselves in situations where they weren't playing at their club level. I think it was a really good move by Zach to come back to get games on a consistent basis. Unfortunate that he has some injury issues along the way. Matt Freese, who I also had in at the under 19 national team, has continued to progress really well. And now the battle's on. Maybe with Matt going to Lyon, he'll get a consistent game. And we could see an incredible transformation in Matt Turner over the next 12 months, and maybe he'll be the guy. But there's some work to do for the strikers and for the goalkeepers to impress Mauricio over the next 12 months.
Yeah. Can I ask just a quick follow-up? Yeah. As a goalkeeper, which of the four available strikers would you fear the most?
Nobody. I don't fear people.
I think you get what I'm trying to ask. Like, which one would who's more goal dangerous? He's like, nobody. And you say you're not intimidating, by the way, Brad.
I like Pepe's movement in the box. I coached Josh Sargent. He has a really powerful strike on him. And I would like to see him in the Premier League and see how he deals with the next level of physical defenders. Because he's strong, he's quite quick, but he's not tall, but you don't have to be tall to be good, of course. But I'd like to see how he dealt playing against Virgil van Dijk, etc. Pepe's a bit more of a force. I like when Balogun's fit, I really like his vertical running. I think it's excellent. So I would probably think Pepe.
Okay, yeah. Cool. All
right. Yeah, I think that's probably number one written in pencil for most people right now.
His movement in the box is excellent. I think he has. I know Mauricio will generally like to press teams, and I think he has the work rate. But Josh Sargent does as well, and Balogun does as well. You know.
Yeah.
You know, we just have to wait and see what happens.
Interesting.
As a former goalkeeper as well, from an emotional perspective, and just because I feel like I'm so much more locked into, you know, rosters and who has the opportunity to make the national team than I ever was in like the 90s, right? From an emotional perspective, is it really what's happening now? Is it really that different from how it was back then? You guys had to battle each other, the goalkeepers, to get that number one spot. You are the fourth most capped goalkeeper for the U.S. men's national team. So you were in a stretch where there were a lot of good goalkeepers and a lot of competition. Is it any different than it was back then?
Well, the main difference is we used to get a fax.
Okay. That joint? Damn.
You'd be waiting by the fax machine. Am I in or am I out? We had, I'll say this. So my main competition during the time I was with the national team was split between Jurgen Sommer, Casey Keller, and Tony Meola, all outstanding goalkeepers. But the main common denominator we all had was we all were playing. And so like when I wasn't playing regularly, at Liverpool, Casey got the starts with the national team. When Casey left Leicester and then he wasn't a regular starter and I was at Blackburn and I was a regular starter, then I was starting all the games. But there's a common denominator is the guy who's playing is usually the guy in form. So Tony was playing, he was in MLS and he was playing game after game. And then if you take two goalkeepers, say like Tim Howard and myself, when I wasn't playing at Liverpool, what did I do? I left. Did I want to leave Liverpool? No. It was my boyhood club. I loved Liverpool, but I needed to leave to play. When he was at Man United, did he want to leave Man United? I'm sure he did not. Who wants to leave? But he did what was best for him, and he went to another great club in Everton. And he had a wonderful career from that point out. So the common denominator? Playing.
Yeah.
So Jurgen Sommer, playing. Like, so we always had competition. So, you know, I would look at Leicester's results. I'd want to know how he was playing. Not because I disliked him. I like Casey. But I respected him as a goalkeeper and I wanted to be better than him.
Right, right. Like, I love this sort of era we're in, where we're maybe this is the positive of social media, because a lot of former players now have podcasts and have platforms. And Tim Howard, I mentioned this a couple months ago, but he was on Ben Foster's podcast last year. And it was a great moment because there was a clip that kind of went viral of him saying that whenever there was a goalkeeper ahead of him, he specifically said, I would hope that they got pumped and they got scored a whole bunch of goals so that I would get the next opportunity. And some people are like, well, doesn't that hurt your team to hope that the player in front of you does not play well? But maybe this is a different
That's
kind
the
of
mentality you need to be number one, though.
Especially as a goalkeeper, right?
So let me put it to you in a different sport. So if you're a pitcher and you're coming through the ranks, do you want all the starting pitchers to always have perfect games so you don't play?
Exactly. Yeah.
Or you have to get the perfect game as well. But as a goalkeeper, one guy plays. Like that at the club level, that's generally what it is. At the international level, that's what it is. I never wanted anyone to get hurt or have their career blemished or anything like that, but you want to play. And I think if you don't have sort of more of a cutthroat mentality, and this is maybe what some people were struggling with at New England with me, is that it's very hard to become a Michael Jordan, a Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, that they're the basketball. Because I'm sure they have a cutthroat attitude too.
Yeah.
It's just the sporting differences of the elite, et cetera. So, sure. I've played with quite a few like career number twos, and they have a different mentality than I did.
Hold on. That's for real.
That is remarkable. Well, yeah,
they were great teammates.
Yeah, yeah.
But they were really, really good goalkeepers. Probably better in training than I was.
Right.
But not in the games.
I mean, but just the moniker, the label of career number two.
Especially
coming from you, Brad Friedel, just saying, hey, there's something.
That's bars.
It's bars. Yeah. It's definitely. I'm also like internalizing it. I'm like, I can't be a career number two. No, nah. Like this guy.
But this is similar in comedy though. When you're featuring a lot,
yeah,
you're the guy that does 15 before the headliner does an hour. You kind of are like, I want to have a better set than that headliner. Yeah. So that at the end of the show, people come to me and go, you were the really funny one. We come back to see you.
In comedy, though, what happened before you say you're about to say in comedy, what happens if you are an amazing number two, you are an amazing feature before the headliner, that headliner will be like, no, don't book him.
Yeah.
Don't book him. I don't want him around because he's gonna basically hurt my own set.
Yeah, he's gonna bury you.
So you're sort of sometimes punished for being too good at the number.
That's also
two.
What bad features tell themselves about why they don't get booked. I'm too good.
Well, there were two things going through a career that I never wanted to have happen. One, thankfully I never really got close to luckily because of the clubs I played for was a relegation. I'd be embarrassed. Like really, and don't I know there's a lot of people that relegate. I'm just saying, me personally, like right, I would hate that feeling to wake up the next day and know people at the club lost their jobs because the wages went down, and you would, you know, the kitchen staff or the parking staff, these great people that are associated for years and years with a football club might not be there because the finances couldn't take it because he relegated. Like that was one thing that I never wanted to have him. Thankfully, that never did. And the other was, I never wanted to be a number two. Ever. The only time I accepted it was when I was 43 and 44 years of age at Tottenham. I was finishing my A license and my pro license, and I was coaching at the academy and coming over to the first team. But I was done as a player. They kept me on as the number three. Hugo Lloris was there and Michelle Vorm. If something terrible happened, they had me. I always kept myself in great fitness levels, but everything was spoken about in the open, and I knew what I was doing, and like I wasn't competing so much anymore for the first spot. I was there if needed. That was the only time in my career I ever accepted not playing at the top level. Every other time I pushed myself out to go play.
Brad, you should have stayed in MLS longer. You wouldn't have to worry about any of that stuff.
But I actually never did have to go to Blackburn and Blackburn Villa and Tottenham. I always played.
So. You have a historic career.
Yeah, great career.
And this is just thank you for taking the time. I know we went a little bit longer than
we got to have you back on, though. We want to talk about, you know, Besiktas and all the work you're doing out there.
Yeah, you're out.
Whenever.
All right. Yeah, we'll stay.
You guys think I'm intimidating, but just stay in touch, right?
We're scared to email you, buddy.
Brad Friedel, thank you so much for joining us. Everybody, also, the final of the Club World Cup is going to be this Sunday. We're going to be live right after the game. So tune in to the Cooligans on YouTube and across all Yahoo Sports channels, and we're going to be there talking about and reacting to the game. Brad Friedel, absolute honor. You're welcome back anytime. I know you, we only scratched the surface of the wealth of stories that I know that you have. So please, we got to make sure you come back.
And if you
find
yourself in New York, you're welcome to come by the studio
exactly.
anytime.
I'll let you guys know.
All right. Cheers, Brad Friedel. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brad Friedel. Thank you so much for being a part of the show.
Shout out to Brad.
Yes. Listen, obviously, Chelsea, we were there. We saw them absolutely destroy Fluminense. And we just finished watching Real Madrid get absolutely smacked up by PSG.
Absolutely destroyed, I think, applies for PSG.
For both. But this, obviously, now we know what the final is for Club World Cup. It's going to be Chelsea versus PSG. And let's take a look around the league.
Club World Cup, we've been going to a couple games. We were at Dortmund, Madrid.
Yeah.
We
went to Alali Porto.
So it's been a cool experience of just seeing, again, like all the way all the supporters and people from different countries. And now we're getting to the point of the tournament of like, everybody was complaining that they had to play in it. And now everybody's like, oh, okay, there's millions and millions of dollars right at stake.
Two teams that don't need it will be playing each other.
Well, Chelsea could probably use it a little bit more than PSG.
Could they?
Yeah.
I guess for PSR rules.
Exactly. Yeah. But the... Okay, so we know the final. A game, obviously, we're talking about with a lot of storylines and implications, obviously, PSG against Real Madrid. A 4-0... so now I think Inter Miami is absolved of like, some Messi and MLS and blah, blah, blah. What the hell happened to Real Madrid at MetLife today?
I mean, you mentioned in the intro, minus, you know, your new center back.
Sure.
Yeah, Dean Huijsen, who, I mean, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. I say it like Huijsen sauce.
Is that a sauce? I don't know.
You don't know what hoisin sauce is?
I'm here to learn.
This is the problem with having a nutritionist wife. She's in the room. Sorry, I'm not being disrespectful. You're not allowed to eat these high salt sauces. They're not allowed to come in your house.
Hoisin sauce.
You know what hoisin sauce is. Like, almost looks like a super thick soy sauce.
Okay.
But it's not salty like soy sauce.
All right.
Oh, it's so good. We're going to get some. If you've ever had teriyaki before?
I've had teriyaki.
Sometimes hoisin sauce is used as a replacement for teriyaki.
Okay,
sauce.
Well, yeah, I don't know. It just sounds like something.
Buddy, you're not allowed to eat it. Dean, don't worry about it.
It's what Dean Huijsen calls his own sauce.
So teriyaki lower back.
Anyway, 4-0.
Sorry, we're talking about Club World Cup.
Mbappe starts this game. As soon as I saw the starting lineup, I'm like, this is a mistake.
Can we just talk about the vibe change from the past few years?
You go,
where now he starts and you're like, this is it. We're going to lose now.
You go, because you go, you have the, I mean, Gonzalo Garcia starts as well, but now Vinny's moved to the right, Mbappe on the left. Now you're changing everything.
It's too much.
Things have been going pretty well. I think this was a huge mistake, and I understand Huijsen is out, so maybe that causes another change.
No, you
got to
play Mbappe against his old club. That's what the whole point was.
And what happened? How'd it work out?
The way it worked out last year in the Champions League, it's like Mbappe got to watch y'all win. But this time, he got a front row seat.
I'm like, he's a good ticket.
Damn. Yo, my ex is doing great.
Yeah, this is, I mean, I'm not going to say that is the only reason they lost, because the defensively, I've been saying this throughout the whole tournament, and even at the games at MetLife, we've been to three games there at night and in the afternoon. It is brutally hot, and whether you're a fan watching the game, whether you're in the shade, whatever, but definitely if you're in the sun, it is a much tougher experience.
And where's the pitch?
It's directly
in the sun. Yeah.
I'm like, why did they build it that way?
Yeah. Put the fans over here.
Just play on an air conditioner. Yeah. Giant fans. Yeah. And you, the ball's just floating in the air.
You know, they got those cameras on the strings, right?
Yeah.
Put a couple of air conditioners up there, buddy.
Irresponsible of MetLife to not do that.
Follow us around.
So it's really hot. And the mistake Asensio makes in giving up that first goal, we've already seen it enough and watching games there. As soon as you give up that first goal, psychologically, you're like, it's hot.
It's too hot to chase the
ball
down.
I don't
want to
be here.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And we just gave up a goal and made a dumb mistake. And it's just, it snowballs into just, I mean, I wish there was snow, but it snowballs into a just worse situation. And that's what it looked like it happened with Real Madrid.
I think the heat compounded with
Kvaratskhelia nutmegging people and these pacey ass wingers and strikers. It's a nightmare for teams.
Again, I'm gonna sound like I'm glazing this dude with hoisin sauce. I think Luis Enrique making the adjustments before the game and even during a game to absolutely body these other teams. There was earlier in the competition when Inter played. I forgot who Inter played. They were doing 1-2s with Bastoni, and it was seemingly working, freeing up Doué. And then when PSG go, and I'm sorry, not Doué, freeing up Bastoni, and I can't remember who it was that was in front of him at the time. But when PSG come to play him, they're aware of it, and they're running with the player as opposed to getting caught out. Like, they're studying the game. They're changing their tactics, and I think this is something that we're going to see a lot more of with teams moving forward, is like not being so stodgy, like the old Arsene Wenger way of like, no, we're going to play our game and we're going to beat them doing it our way, which is we'll still play our game, but what are the adjustments we can make to not only play our game, but take their best weapons out of it? And Luis Enrique is doing that way better than what Xabi Alonso has already been able to do with such short time. And you see it every time they play somebody, whether it's Inter Miami or Real Madrid. People were, like you said, people were like, oh, Inter Miami have all the best players in the world from 10 years ago, and look at the class that they were showing with PSG. Yo, he just did it to one of the best squads in the world.
It is pretty remarkable to make really good teams look bad. And so hard. And Luis Enrique has done it, especially these last like 6 months. I mean, it's been pretty impressive. yeah, this, I mean, it's embarrassing. And it, like, again, the storyline with Mbappe, you obviously, you start him because he's going to play against his old team and blah, blah, blah. You want the viewers and, mm-hmm. And
who knows them better than
the
Mbappe.
Zone is excited. They're like, yes, we got the storyline. Messi's out of the tournament, but now we have this. Embarrassing. This was, Mbappe looked really bad. Yeah. Really, really bad.
This has to be one of Mbappe's most embarrassing days.
Yeah, and it's not even that he was like objectively bad. It was just that they everybody made him look bad, like look worse. Did he have a shot on target? Don't even know if he had a shot on target. I feel like every shot was blocked.
I could look it up.
Of his. Fabian Ruiz was brilliant. Vitinha was brilliant.
Vitinha is always brilliant. This is the best I've ever seen Fabian Ruiz.
I'm just like, what the hell's happened this last like year?
Luis Enrique, bro, unlocked him.
He's incredible. So, this is a game that he had
one shot on target. Mbappe.
Yeah. Did he play all 90?
Mbappe had the least touches, 27, of any outfield player to play 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Oof.
I mean, just to think of him being that, it's like, if that was the stats for like Patrick Ajimar, I understand.
That's like if me and you go to McDonald's and they're like, Alexis ordered a salad, you'd be like, that just doesn't feel right.
So, so it's really disappointing. This is also as like, even if I look at MetLife, the Real Madrid games are every Real Madrid,
wherever Real Madrid goes.
I mean, at the Dortmund Real Madrid, it was 90%, maybe even more of Real Madrid. So this is one of those things where I'm sure there's Real Madrid fans that are seeing the team for the first time, getting to go to such a huge game, and that's the game that they see. So it's like disappointing even for like a neutral, whatever. It's just not a great game. So you would expect something more.
I am looking forward to the final though. This is going to be fun. Chelsea. PSG versus Chelsea, Maresca, another coach that I glaze often, versus Luis Enrique. I think I said from the beginning PSG was going to win the whole thing easily, and I think we're seeing it in real time. I don't think Chelsea's going to put up anything, put up much of a fight. I think it's probably going to be another 3-0, 4-0.
And it's, the glazing is consistent because Alexis even,
I should own Manchester United. Alexis, I'm a glazer, dog.
Alexis even glazed Maresca. To the Maresca family.
Oh, yeah. I saw his wife was in VIP and I go, yo, you speak English? And she goes, yeah. I go, I do American television. Tell your husband, even though I'm Arsenal, I've been telling everybody, yo, back when he was at Leicester and everything, I'm like, yo, he's going to be great. And look at it. Now he's proven it. He's a great coach. I go, I even won $50 because I bet they'd have more points at the end of the season than last. And she goes, thank you. I think she was like, please stop talking.
the you speak English is hilarious because you speak Spanish. Yeah, yeah. And she also does.
No, they're Italian.
No, Maresca, he speaks Spanish. He's Italian?
He's Italian.
Oh, he speaks Spanish fluently, though.
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay. I heard it's Spanish.
I looked her name up because I was going to say, I said hello. I can't remember her name now, but I said senora, blah, 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 or whatever, miss, blah, blah, blah. But sure. Okay. I don't know if she does. So she's Italian. Gotcha, I wasn't going to go up and go, oye, señora, habla inglés. Oye, tu esposo.
She probably does.
You know what I should have done? I should have said, like, Vertongen, Gewinnen, Bunglasse, Ule.
Yeah, yeah. You got to lead it. Lead with your strong German.
This guy's yelling German off his phone. If you listen to the audio, you'll get that joke.
Yeah, so final should be interesting. I mean, you would expect nothing less than another just smacking around of you know, the opponents.
Why
with
couldn't
PSG.
I be in a room with Luis Enrique's wife? That sounded crazy, actually.
Bro, relax, dog.
That sounded crazy.
Relax.
No, that sounded crazy. All right.
Anyway, okay, last thing, because this Club World Cup has started a different kind of conversation, a different kind of discourse around the Saudi Pro League, because the Saudi team did do pretty well in this tournament, better than the Major League Soccer team.
Ooh.
So the question, has this Club World Cup proven that the Saudi Pro League is better and more, more, you know, just in a better place than Major League Soccer?
Has this Club World Cup proven that the Saudi Pro League is bigger or better than MLS?
Yes.
No, it's proven that they spend more money
on certain teams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Certain teams. I think the median is probably pretty close. If not, maybe MLS has a little bit of a leg up because they have probably stronger academies. There's a larger pool. The US is a bigger nation. There's a lot more people to pull from. But at some point, when it comes to being able to put together a good team, like Al Hilal is a very stacked team. And we talked about this at the beginning of the tournament. And people were like, yo, what we asked the question, like, what match are you most looking forward to? I said Al-Hilal versus Real Madrid.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, because, yo, Al-Hilal's low-key stacked. They got some players. It's not just three. They've got players across the board. And this is what I keep saying. Does the U.S. have Saudi money? No, we don't have stores and stores of natural oil that we as a nation can sell that almost feels like an endless bank account. We absolutely do not have that. But we have large brands. We have lots of corporate companies that make a lot of money. That's our version of the oil state. You know, it was the corporate state, if you will. Yeah. We have access to be able to buy these players, whether it's companies that sponsor these teams, the sponsorships, the owners, the billionaires that own these teams. We have the ability to buy these types of players. But MLS's own rules stop you from being able to load your team up with the best Americans there are and the best players from around the world that want to play in America. It's MLS's own fault that if you want to say that Saudi League is bigger and better, and if you, the fans, want to comment, go ahead and comment that you think the Saudi League is already ahead of MLS. It's because MLS stops MLS from being better.
Sure. No arguments there. I think this tournament is not the thing, the determining factor.
It's hard to not use it. Is that because you're playing teams from across the spectrum?
It is a factor. But it shows the, like, the, you know, LAFC, Sounders, and Inter Miami against who are the team? Al-Hilal. Who was the other Saudi team that that qualified?
It wasn't Al Ittihad. Who was the? It was Al-Hilal and
who's the other?
No, they're from Egypt. Al Ahly is from Egypt.
Al Ain.
Al Ain
is the other one, I think. Okay. So there is the advantage is that they that the Saudi League has is obviously the money. They can offer an exorbitant amount of money to stack a few rosters, but
you can also buy players at a high value that MLS can't.
Yes, but then when you think about, like, homegrown talent. Saudi Arabia was playing the Gold Cup. Were those, like, MLS is focused on development, right? Saudi Arabia has not. That's not their priority. We see the Saudi Arabian players, and they're okay. They're fine. They didn't get embarrassed at the Gold Cup, but they lost to the U.S., and those are the American players that were basically developed here. Exactly. So it isn't, comparing leagues is a little bit moot, because it's like you're not comparing a nationality, you're not comparing a every team in a league is not developed the same way. MLS has much more uniformity because I think the country's so big and they're trying to create a system or culture that can be the foundation of, like, the future and stuff like that. So it's because of MLS's roster rules, they're not going to succeed in tournaments like this. I mean, it's almost impossible. It's really impossible.
We don't give ourselves the depth. It's so annoying. Free up the rules during the competition.
I mean,
teams could assign whoever they wanted. What MLS team signed somebody? Nobody.
Right. I think LAFC was the only team that I think signed somebody. I remember.
It's ridiculous.
But yeah, it's.
Also, yes. Here's my point, though. 10 years ago, we were saying the exact same thing. When we started this podcast, the conversation was the Chinese Super League was taking over MLS's place, and that's where all the players wanted to go and make big money. And where are they right now? Nobody's talking about them. And I'm not saying the Saudi League's going to collapse tomorrow, but without the stars.
Yeah, well, the Chinese Super League is, interestingly, it sort of collapsed. Like, that's what they were trying to do, which is, like, bring in famous superstars. And I think they had like a DP rule.
Xi Jinping had he made it very clear that he wanted the country to be known for soccer.
Yeah.
They wanted more soccer. Like, they were forcing everyone. So to curry favor with him, these major corporate owners that also own soccer teams are like, well, we'll just bring the best players and we'll show you we also care about soccer, so we could kind of keep everything, the way it's going so far. Like, I'm still in favor with the government. And look what happened when they're like, yo, what we're doing is losing money. We're not getting any better.
Fell apart. So they had like a rule. They had like a certain amount of like international players. And then they cut that number down from like 3 to 1. And all those players, Hulk, Oscar, they all went.
Tevez.
They all left. They were like, okay, well, and there's always those concerns about, it's always about stability and just getting your paycheck and all these other things. And that is what MLS offers, stability, but it doesn't really offer the kind of money that Saudi can. So
for some people, they get good money, but it's not that kind of money.
It's not many. Most of the players don't. So
it ain't Saudi money.
It's
which I will, if Cooligans will work for the Saudi Pro League. I don't know if We've mentioned this live on the show before.
Yeah, he speaks for me.
Yeah, no, 2 years and you don't pay taxes, bro.
So I don't know.
Your wife in the room, thumbs up, Saudi Arabia.
I was on.
I'm looking.
I was on Minuto 93 podcast the other day. Shout out to those homies, Costa Rican homies, and we had this conversation.
Pura vida, bro.
We're having this conversation, and I was just simply put like. How many Saudi games are you watching?
Yeah.
How many are you really watching?
All of them. call our agent, dude.
We're like, you want to see my Saudi Pro League tattoo? I got it.
I only eat all halal, bro. You think I won't put a hyphen after the AL in Alexis? I'll be Alexis, bro. You think I won't?
Okay. Paul Anko.
You know Al Nasser. You've heard of Al Ittihad. How about Alexis, bro?
Okay. What a club. All right.
By the way, one of our producers is just shaking his head.
All right. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back after this.
All right. Welcome back to the show. I just want to warn all of our listeners and viewers. There's going to be some subjects covered here, in particularly talking about SA and R. So if that is something that is a worry to you or may trigger something that you are uncomfortable with, I would suggest turning the content off right here. The reason we're going to bring this up is because Thomas Partey, formerly of Arsenal, has just been charged with, I believe, 5 counts of rape and 1 charge of sexual assault.
Yeah.
The timing of it is a bit suspicious.
Yes, because his contract expired on June 30th. And then...
The alleged offenses are from 2021 and 2022.
Right, when he was in Arsenal. But he signed that year or the year prior? I don't remember.
I believe all of the charges are within the timeline of his Arsenal contract.
So that is this has been something... That it's more than just murmurs. It was clearly something happened, and it was reported. But due to laws in England, you're sort of not allowed to mention anyone by name.
Yeah, unless 'cause being charged is specific, whereas in the U.S. it's not, right? Like being charged until they're proven innocent or guilty, you can, I guess, be tried for slander or maybe. Or charged with slander, I should say, or maybe like influencing the trial itself through the media.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of worries. And a lot of that goes back to when I was doing the show with Flex on Complex and the Mason Greenwood news broke. I was like, we got to talk about it. He's like, I'm not saying don't. He's like, I just can't be involved because I can get sued.
Right.
Or I could get in trouble legally. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. It's very different here where you have sort of that freedom of speech in the press.
Sure. Countries have different laws when it comes to, protecting people's reputation. But when we've experienced this all too much, existing and seeing stories like this, the concern here and it's a lot of optics, it's a lot of speculation. We don't know who knew what. Did the club know or do they not know? Were they protective in any way or were they not? It's impossible to know. It just looks terrible.
The optics of it are horrific. I will say, like, there is only so much the club can do, right? There's some signaling they could have done, like get rid of the player, you know what I mean? There's certain things they could have done. Me as an Arsenal fan, and I think you'll see this repeated across a lot of Arsenal fans that sort of we know that we're friends with, I refuse to say this man's name.
Right.
I've refused to applaud anything he's been a part of. I've refused to root for him in any way, shape, or form. And I've been embarrassed this entire time that he's been a part of the club. I can understand the club not being able to come out and go, we're going to get this, R or SA or off our team. I get you can't say that. It's frustrating to know that he's been a part of the club this long. I do not understand the legalities behind what could they have done to have stopped him from being charged. I don't think anything. So I get the timing of it is like wild sus. And I'd be the first one to be like, hey, yo.
Yeah, let's bring up Fabrizio's tweet about it because there are a couple quotes in there that
this is a bit more full of information.
I think share some light. So,
the Metropolitan Police Service says the Crown Prosecution Service has authorized the Metropolitan Police Service to charge a man after a file of evidence was submitted by detectives.
And so we'll read the rest, but that's the one where it's like, all right, well, why was it submitted now. Do you know what I mean? Right.
But we're also not sure how long the investigation took. I think there was an issue with the first allegation, which there was like a certain amount of time after. Like there was something to do with the statute of limitations.
We'll talk. Let me read the rest. It says the Met has issued a charge and requisition to Thomas Partey, 32 years old, of Hertfordshire, in connection with the following offenses: 5 counts of rape and 1 count of sexual assault, offenses alleged to have taken place between 2021 and 2022.
It's because the contract runs out and 3 days later you get charged with a sleeve of offenses.
It's crazy. And again, all speculation, but it sounds and feels like as soon as the cover of like I'm a Premier League footballer is that shield is sort of taken away, then it's like, all right, cool. Then here are the offenses. And look, you can't accuse the club or anyone at the club about what they knew or did not know. They are never going to comment, and we're never going to ever really know. And it's just a difficult thing to sit with as a fan of any club. And this is Arsenal are not the only club that have ever dealt with something like this. I think it should be a deeper conversation because, and it's something that probably needs to happen in a different space than simply Twitter or whatever, because it's psychotic, right? People say the most gross things,
the anonymity of the internet has created, you know, and the it case makes where it, people say some wild
it
shit.
Makes it feel like, oh, like if the idea that Thomas Partey was kicked off the team, that would have been wrong because people are yelling on the internet or
but
things
that's
like
the
that.
World you live in.
So that's what I'm saying. It's like the conversation about it of like being a fan of a club when somebody at your club does something and how it's sort of handled obviously affects your fandom. It affects your connection with the team. It's something that clubs need to, working in this field, we've spoken to people and not about like sort of serious offenses like this, but sometimes players need to be looked after in a way that doesn't feel sort of like you're not their parents, right? But sometimes, like coaches and coaching staff have to look after players of like, hey, this guy parties a lot. Like we got to make sure, is he home or what?
Right.
But it's
usually things like, are they, you know, stepping out on their significant other?
Hey,
Are they maybe getting involved in drink or drugs when they shouldn't be? And
right.
Things like that. I mean, this is a whole nother level.
Yeah. And
you have to think about the women who support your club. You have to think about the women who work at your club. How comfortable is it knowing that there's a guy walking the halls or being, you know, their photo being put on the big screen and people rooting for them when they're convicted, they're an even alleged rapist. Yeah. It's horrific.
It's something that, look, I mean, there's examples of, there's no like quote unquote right way to sort of handle this because
there's some good examples though. I will say Manchester United, I think, handled the Mason Greenwood thing correctly. They got him off the team and they won't even ever consider bringing him back. It's like, and that one's even fraught with some other things because like, I know he's still with the lady, but as far as I'm concerned, once you do something like that, bro, I can't have you be an ambassador to this club.
Right, but it doesn't necessarily make it easier that he's at Marseille playing well and doing all this stuff.
I said Manchester United. Marseille, I don't think is handling all that well.
I'm just saying, it's like maybe, you know, like clearly clubs have a different either view or perspective or...
I think it's about the ethos of the club and as, you know, Arsenal being a club I support, I've not been happy about it. And there's been certain comments that Mikel Arteta has made in the past where, you know, there's one where he said everything he's going through. I like to believe, based on everything else Mikel Arteta said, that he was simply talking about the injuries.
Exactly.
Partey was going through.
But
if it has to do with this stuff.
Yeah, the legal stuff.
That's pissing me off. And I think Mason Greenwood is another good topic to bring up because there was audio leaked of a situation with him and his lady where he came off looking absolutely horrific.
Yeah, of course,
and that led to the majority of people going, get him out of our club. There were screen caps of texts going back and forth between Thomas Partey and the first woman to allege that something had happened. At least as I recall it, that was the first one where he's like apologizing for being a terrible human being.
Mm-hmm.
That to me was enough to be like, yo, dude, get this guy out of the club. And the fact that he never did ridiculously pissed me off. So the fact that number 5 is out of our club, I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, it's and I'll say this as like an example, like even as an Everton fan, like Gylfi Sigurdsson when that situation arose, and whether it's wrong or right, whether he might be innocent or not, the allegation is something that is difficult to hold on to continue, you know, business as usual. It's almost impossible to ignore. So I think the charges might have been dropped. I don't exactly remember.
I think he technically like beat the case, but I
don't know.
Whatever.
You sort of get like kind of tarred and feathered, and whether that's fair or not, it's that you have to disassociate, and it might not be fair. But these constant allegations, I mean, and then you read more about like even Partey and arrested multiple times and all the time. I'm like, I didn't even know about like that, like to that.
Yeah, because I think they're like not allowed to tell. I think in England, like you're not allowed to say.
Yeah,
because unless you're charged, or something, so whatever the case may be,
there has to be some thought on you know, victim of sexual assault and rape and these are.
Sad you have a women's team.
Right.
Yeah. Or, what are you talking about?
Yeah, and just like, you know, not even just a women's team, but you have like female employees that are working there as well. Like, are they at risk too and stuff like that?
Yeah, of course.
It's
do you trust a female employee to go work hand in hand? Which I know a lot of these employees, like whether it's media training or have to go to an event. What do? Not allow any other women to go because, oh, there's a guy we're not sure of. Think of the guy out of your club.
That can't even be a thought. That can't even be a concern.
And by the way, I understand that not everyone that's going to be in your club is always going to be the most upstanding individual, but a line has to be drawn somewhere. And if you are someone who is attacking or, you know, assaulting women, that to me seems like that's over that line.
Without a doubt.
I mean, I know there's a part of the internet that's like, what are you talking about? I get that. But for me, it's like just, I get that. And like to you know, piggyback on what you said, it's not always going to be you're not always going to know all the information. To me, where there's smoke, there's fire. And this was a lot of smoke. Especially after the screen caps leak, dog, you got to move on.
Yeah, it's
I want better for my club.
Yeah, better for almost any place you are working at. That's kind of it should feel like that is the sort of standard or bare minimum when it comes to kind of workplace safety. And I understand that clubs are dealing with like bigger brands and there's obviously a lot of money involved and all this other stuff.
All the more reason. But that to me is all the more reason.
But it's all the more reason to really do your research before you sign who you sign.
You got
to
vet these players.
Do the work. I mean, it might be like annoying, or you might have to ask a lot of questions that you're not, you know, not sort of excited to ask about. But bro, this is again,
if I remember correctly, he was purchased for £45 million. That's a lot of money to commit to somebody who's going to be a terrible human being.
Right.
So I think it actually makes a good business case to vet players.
Sure.
On a personal level.
And again, you hope, and we have absolutely no idea if the club knew anything about it, but you hope that they did not.
I think what happens next will tell you, right? Make a statement, do something. If now that he's charged, if you're legally allowed to do something to let the fans know, we have, you know, LGBTQ days, we have this days, we have like, in America, we do the red ribbon for breast cancer. We do all these things. If you really do support, if you do support the women in your club, the women who support your club, the women who play for your club, who work at your club, if you support all of that, and if you really support a society you say you do, make a statement, show the world that you are that club.
It's interesting, but I think maybe they're like sort of hands are tied legally.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, they won't. When the time is right, when you're able to do something to signal to the fans, this is not good enough.
Yeah, it's a very odd, it's an unsettling and uncomfortable feeling of, and it's not worse than the victims of sexual assault. So it's not that this should be the spotlight of the conversation. But it is.
No, we're talking from a fan perspective. More from your club is fair.
It's just an uncomfortable place to kind of be in. So, you know, obviously we see all the discourse online and all the conversations. And there have been a lot of interesting articles about it.
I think everyone is reporting on it as well, because that's how you keep this above grade.
And more than I think it's important to keep talking about it and to hold whoever is responsible, accountable, and we all together sort of figure out what it means to be a supporter of a club and what values and standards we hold them up to. So, all right. Thank you, everybody, for obviously joining us on the show. We appreciate it. We will be, just a reminder, we're going to be live on Sunday evening or mid-afternoon for the Club World Cup final. So
as soon as the final whistle blows, you go right to our YouTube, baby.
Exactly. And we've been having a great time doing those.
The chat's crazy. The chat's so funny. Join in. You got jokes. You got banter. Get in there.
Exactly. And
type it up.
Maybe Carter, producer Carter, and graphics Josh will highlight your comment. So bring the heat. We appreciate it as always. Make sure you follow us at Soccer Cooligans on all social channels and hit the
real
like
quick. Button. Like the button. Yeah. Hit like the button. Like the video. Button.
Yes. Buddy. Tell the button you like it.
You know what? I'm not asking you to love it. You know, just like it.
You know, baby steps. Yeah. You know, you don't just tell the button you like it before good you touch it.
Good advice for, you know, the night after your wedding.
All right, everybody. We'll see you on Sunday, everybody, for the Club World Cup final. Join us on YouTube and all Yahoo Sports channels. Peace.
Love you guys.